It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. Dialing in from our headquarters in Toronto, I'm Neil Modi, and with me, my usual co-host, Phil Emery. How you doing, Phil?
Calling in from St. John's, Newfoundland. Very excited for the upcoming Turkey Day, is what we have it in Canada, when you should have it, so it's not so close to Christmas.
We're talking to our American fans there, right?
That's true. Well, we love you anyways, for the most part.
Of course, we love you all, and it's all good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Turkey Day. Perfect.
Indeed.
Alrighty. Okay, for everyone else, please send your comments, questions, your stuffing menus to Song Talk Radio on Facebook or Instagram, feedback@songtalk.ca for the email, and we'll share your thoughts on the show. And please visit songtalk.ca to see the show post for this episode, find links to resources we mention, and to download lyric and chord sheets to follow along with the songs that we feature. Okay, so today, it's a special episode of Song Talk Radio, just in the family. Just going to be talking about a few news items and our upcoming songwriting challenge, which is very imminent now. maybe we just start with the administrative stuff. The songwriting challenge, of course, this year is to write a song in an odd time signature. If you've been listening to the podcast lately, we're asking our listeners and previous guests to please send in your answers to the challenge by November the 10th, 2025. We'll be doing a few episodes after that point of listener songs and showcasing them and talking about them. So when you send us, you can email us feedback@songtalk.ca. Send us your MP3, your lyric sheet with chords preferably, and the time signatures on the lyric sheet would be handy. And a little paragraph or two about your songwriting process, what you went through, and how you tackled this challenge.
Yes.
And that'll do it for our listeners' songs. So thank you to everyone who's been sending your songs so far. We've gotten a few so far, and it's been good to hear them.
Very inspiring and yes. Very impressive. Impressive stuff, man.
Yeah. Seriously stuff. Our listeners always send in the coolest songs. It's really, really inventive. And
it's because we have the best listeners, Neil.
We have the best listeners. They're awesome. Okay. And you got a little bit of a news bit. You shot me on Instagram a little while ago about Spotify doing some nasty stuff. what's Spotify up to these days?
Yes. Well, this is always a challenge when you put your stuff up on someone else's platform. And Neil did a great article on his website about why musicians should have their own website. You're playing in someone else's field and they get to set the terms. And Spotify has changed their terms. And sometimes companies will do this because they need to cover their butts in case of, you know, rebroadcasting your stuff to other countries or what have you. But it looks like Spotify has gotten very aggressive with their implied ownership of your material once it's uploaded to their platform.
Mm-hmm.
This is very recent, so stuff could change. It's worthwhile if you are going to upload your material to any service. I think Bandcamp's quite good, but on any of them, make sure that you understand what you're getting into. And if you're just a hobbyist and you don't care, you just want people to hear your stuff, maybe it's not that much of an issue. But if you are a professional or you're wanting to be a professional, you might want to spend some time and read the terms that you agree to. Because I think Spotify says that they can use your stuff in for the rest of time. And if your work can be used to make derivative works. And I'm not sure if they're going to make the derivative works. All sorts of nasty stuff. So take a listen to it. Well, maybe one day we'll do a bit more of a in-depth show on it. But it's pretty concerning, I think.
Yeah, and I think even if you're not a professional songwriter, you just might be concerned because your intellectual property is still your intellectual property, and taking ownership of something in this day and age, it does seem there are a lot more blurry lines than there used to be, you know, with streaming services and things like that. Because essentially when you're streaming, even TV shows and movies and things like that, you don't own the disc, you don't own the videotape, you don't own the thing. You're just sort of renting the license to be able to watch it at that time when you demand to, and they have the right to take that movie, TV, song, whatever, down if they feel like it.
Yes.
Right. And they have the power to do that.
Also, because they actually pay the originators of that film the money to be able to broadcast it to North America. And maybe they might not do it. They may not pay for the license to broadcast it to Canada or the or Europe or vice versa. So that's kind of why they do it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of corporations, but sometimes it helps to understand why these corporations do stuff. And sometimes it's just cover their butts, especially down in some countries they're very litigious. You know, they just want to basically cover their butts in case someone wants to make a legal example out of them, you know?
And it kind of does. I mean, I'm completely speculating here, but it kind of feels like Spotify is going after everyone's stuff and claiming ownership over it all just so they can get away with it and say that, well, everyone signed the document. So if we make some AI created content and put it on our own platform and release it and collect, you know, and then in that case, they can keep 100% of the proceeds, I guess, because they did it themselves.
Yeah.
Right. It's sort of like these streaming companies have done. Like Netflix makes its own shows. Amazon makes its own shows. Everyone wants a monopoly on their thing. And you know, maybe Spotify wants to make its own, because I think it already is its own label, isn't it? And make its own music.
Probably,
and if they can make it easily through artificial intelligence based on the database of music they have currently in on their servers, then, you know, you signing that agreement or clicking it with a little checkbox saying you agree to that, then you're basically giving them your stop to feed into their AI models, right?
So this is a very new change, and I'm sure there'll be lots of legal examinations about the pluses and the minuses. So definitely, if your stuff is on Spotify, it's worthwhile taking a look and seeing what's changed and find out what you've agreed to.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, if you do come to the conclusion that you don't want to put your stuff on Spotify, which is a perfectly legitimate thing to do, I mean, who didn't... Was it Taylor Swift that backed out of Spotify? Who's backed out of Spotify?
I think a few, actually.
Yeah. You know, and artists like that, of course, they can get away with doing whatever. They're still going to get their music. But, you know, but if you're deciding not to go with Spotify, then you can always look at your distribution service, whether it's DistroKid or RootNode or CD Baby or whatever. And you should be able to, when you select your stores, you should be able to deselect the Spotify option. You just want to do iTunes and Apple, or Apple Music and YouTube Music and Amazon and Google and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
Which is perfectly your prerogative as an artist to say, I'm not going to put my stuff in that storefront.
Now, I also don't know if it is this new agreement just covers new material uploaded, or if it's for, you know, everything that's ever been uploaded. That I don't know.
Yeah, if that's the case, I imagine they would have to, you know, like I've got my EP on Spotify. I didn't get a direct notice from Spotify saying we've changed our agreement, but I probably signed the agreement that said they can change their agreement willy-nilly without letting me know. So I'm sure I'm not special that way.
You also clicked agree to the agreement where they can come in and punch you in the head anytime they want.
Exactly. It probably cost them too much money to do that.
That's true. That's the only reason they could do it.
Well, and a lot of the time, that's what, you know, when you're talking about license agreements and things between countries and things like that, like it's more, yeah, you're right. It's the corporations are always looking at their bottom line and saying, you know, if it costs too much to have this in Canada, we have no problem just nixing it and moving on to the next thing. Right. But it's probably a little bit beyond their control too, because, you know, politics and governments and things like that have a say in those sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be nice if everything was just shared open and widely. And
if everyone was nice. It'd be nice if everyone was nice. People aren't nice. Except our listeners.
Our listeners are beyond nice. They're wonderful.
Hey, Neil, do you remember when Starbucks had its own record label?
Oh, when they did those, it was CDs or what did they have
they would play the CDs in the stores and then they would sell them.
I didn't realize that was their own label.
Yeah. And they actually got some great stuff off of it.
Yeah. I remember getting some good stuff off of there. And I was like, yeah, it's pretty cool. It was like the iTunes single of the week when they let you have a free download every week. That's a great song through that. I was like,
yeah,
discovered artists I never knew about, and it was cool.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
Talking about old music coming new again.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite band is doing something.
One of my favorite bands. I would say my all-time favorite band, sure. So the latest news with Canadian rock staple Rush. So for listeners who don't know, you know, Rush was a progressive rock band, started in the late 60s, all through 70s, 80s, 90s, trio. They basically kept the same band pretty much from, you know, 1972 until the drummer and lyricist Neil Peart, he passed away in 2020. And, you know, and at that time, you know, these guys are legacy acts by then. And they were still releasing new material at that point, but they're basically a legacy act. And they at that point, it was pretty well declared that that Rush was done because, you know, Neil Peart was such an integral part of that band that without him, how could it possibly be Rush anymore? You know, it's like one third of the band just gone, right? So just in the last week or so, they've the remaining members, Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson, the founding members, because Neil Peart wasn't even a founding member. they have declared that or announced that they're going on a new tour. They're calling it the 50-something tour because it's their 50th anniversary of the band. So they've been around that long.
That's amazing.
And the big news, of course, they have a new drum.
Yeah, which shocked me.
When you hear the news, it's just like, boink, just like blows your mind, right? So they've got this 42-year-old German drummer, Annika Niles. She's got chops. I've seen a couple of videos and man, she's chops.
I've heard someone say that she's maybe one of the best drummers in the world. So,
and she's been on many, many lists and she's been on the cover of Drummer World magazine and all the rest of it. She toured with Beck. She's been around and she's, you know, earned her accolades because she's seriously got those chops and the examples I've seen, I'm like, even if she wasn't directly inspired by Neil Peart, she's carrying some of that,
right.
some of that energy, into her style and into the way she does things. And, apparently they wouldn't have made this announcement if they hadn't, but they apparently have already had several really successful rehearsals and Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson have even said that it was important that they felt inspired. You know, it wasn't just a thing necessarily right, that fans maybe wanted or didn't want or whatever. It wasn't about that. It was about meeting her. I think Paul McCartney was one of the people that told them, you should look at this.
Oh, nice.
You should look at this lady, right? So if you got Paul McCartney's endorsement.
Yeah, that's true. Can't go wrong with that.
But again, I mean, that's a little bit whatever, right? But they were very clear about, you know, we needed to feel inspired when we got together with this drummer. And sure enough, when they got together, and I don't know if they did Rush songs or they did other songs, I don't know. But they had some great rehearsal sessions and great jam sessions, and they felt reignited to be like, yeah, this is what we have to do, you know? So that, I don't know how much, if they went into it with skepticism or not, but yeah, who knows?
Well, it's, you know, they're in an interesting position. Rush always did kind of what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
They never chased styles. They never tried to be pop stars. You know, they just always did what they did. And I always really respected them for that. Because I'm sure early on in their career, I'm sure there was lots of pressure for them to, to do more commercial stuff. And I was very sad when I heard of Neil's passing, and Neil's had so much tragedy in his life beforehand.
Mm. Oh my God, yeah.
And when I first heard about it, I sort of thought, oh, gee, I don't know. Is that, should you just kind of let that go by? But I don't know. She kind of does breathe a bit of life into that. And it might be an interesting change, and maybe they might come up with something new. And
yeah, yeah. It's really interesting to me. I mean, you know, it everyone's focused on the replacement of Neil Peart as a drummer, but he was also not even the primary, he was the lyricist for the band. He was the sole lyricist for that band.
Yeah.
And all the sort of, you know, the songs got pretty philosophical, and they were pretty deep, some of those songs, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of storytelling and stuff. There weren't just, you know, before I always joke with you, Phil, because you really liked their first album.
Yeah.
And it was more about, you know, partying and cars, and well, actually they had another song about cars later on, but it was like Led Zeppelin,
Black Sabbath kind of thing.
Yeah, you know? it was like a little more, you know, rock and roll, that sort of thing. And then Neil Peart came along, and you know, he was an avid reader and everything, and they turned really philosophical and started, like you say about the record labels and stuff like that. Like the story goes that in the 70s, they sort of gave them, like, their first album did pretty well. Their second album was not as good. So the record label said, okay, you guys got one more chance.
Yeah.
Basically. Right. And then they released 2112, which remains one of their, you know.
Yeah. Which is concept
album. Which is it's a really weird, not my favorite Rush album by any stretch.
Okay.
Probably my least favorite Rush album, to be honest.
Oh, really?
I'm not a big fan of it. I like the opening overture and stuff like that, but it just got... It just got really cerebral by the middle. And I was like, you know what? I really like their, like, you know, arena rock stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
like the early 80s stuff, and even some of the stuff in the 90s and into the 2000s even, right? So, I mean, I'm a huge fan, but 2112, it's like Dark Side of the Moon. It's like, I don't know what people goes over it for. Right, so.
I'm the same with Dark Side of the Moon. It's fine. Nothing wrong with it, but
Yeah.
It doesn't do much for me, but that's the great thing about music. There's always something for somebody.
Yeah, yeah. But basically the 2112 came out, and I think at that point, I may be wrong about this, but I think at that point the record label was like, what the hell is this? And they just kind of dropped them, and then that was the point that they became uber popular, and 2112 sold like hotcakes because it was. I guess kind of fresh and new and different. I mean,
oh yeah, definitely.
You know, this was the mid 70s. Everyone else was doing disco by then.
That's true. And they never did disco.
They never did disco. They did get heavy into the synthesizers in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Geddy Lee sort of took off on that. And all the purists were like, this is supposed to be a guitar band, you guys. What do you
think? Well, that kind of made sense because it was as a three piece. Another thing they did is they did not rely on overdubs.
Yeah.
They were very much sort of what they would do live is what was on tape. And that's pretty impressive. You know, they got a lot of mileage out of a three piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And Geddy Lee, especially bass in hand, foot pedals for some of the synthesizer bass line things, and then keyboard on the side and vocals, you know, and he was doing it all right. And so apparently the thing they're contemplating now as well is getting a fourth member on the stage to handle some of those keyboard parts and stuff, just to the edge off of Geddy and off of Alex as well. I mean, Alex Lifeson did, you know, he has mostly guitar, but still, you know, a bunch of their things going on. And yeah, they did do triggering of samples and things and stuff like that on stage. It was all done in real time. Yeah. They never did backing tracks or anything like that.
Yeah. So. Apart from the fact that I'm sure the Rush fans, and Rush fans tend to be very passionate, will be like listening to those drum tracks and listening for every variation, I am sure. Yeah. She can pull it off, I think.
I think she's got the chops to be able to do it. And I think you're right. It'll be a fresh energy. It'll be kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? I mean, I respect Neil Peart beyond anything else, right? And it's like, you know, and then you supposedly he was irreplaceable, and here we are.
Well, and it is one of the problems with bands when they get to that point is they become their own cover band.
Yeah.
And you have some of those bands where there's like no original members left.
Mm.
This kind of gives it a bit of fresh energy.
Yeah, I think so. So we'll wait to see in 2026 what the new Rush lineup will consist of and what it'll look like. It's exciting days, I think, for Rush fans. I think you're right. Rush fans are passionate, but I feel like, I don't know too many Rush fans, to be honest, but I feel like they're the kind of crowd that would be open.
Yeah, it's true.
Something like this. They're not going to be diehards about like, oh, it must be this or must be that or whatever. Yeah. I think they're open enough that they will be willing to accept something. As long as she brings it, you know, and I'm sure she will.
Oh yeah. Well, she's, as I said, many people consider her one of the best in the world.
And I'd never heard of her before this week. And Rick Beato was talking about her and all the YouTubers are talking about her. And it's like, holy cow. And man, she's got chop.
Oh yeah.
So good.
She knows how to play them.
And more importantly than just like, it's like those guitarists that only shred. Yeah. She's got a really musical sensibility about her.
Right. Yes.
Right. Like it seems like she would be good at supporting the song, not just showing off drum.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Which I think would be important to those guys and important to the fans too.
Because
at the end of the day, the songs are king, regardless of how virtuosic these players are.
That is true. Right? Yeah.
Right. It's always the one to hear the songs. And they always had a thing, you know, I don't know if I saw this somewhere when the band was talking about it. They talk about how they do band solos. There's no soloing. There's the band solo. It's basically right, yeah. When Geddy Lee's not singing the lyric, that's when everyone can go crazy.
Right, right.
Right. And that's when Neil Peart can just do these crazy fills and Alice Lifeson can do the crazy runs on the guitar and everything. So they always call them band solos because when you listen to their solo sections, like their instrumental sections, you can sort of, you know, oh yeah, that's a really complicated, crazy bass line. Oh, what a great guitar line. What a great riff. And then Neil Peart's just going bonzo on the drums and you can just listen to any of the three parts individually and it's still just as compelling as the whole thing put together. But it really does sound like, a band solo. It's not a solo, I guess, when there's three of them, but it's a trio.
Yeah. Pretty good.
I feel like Annika Niles is going to have that same kind of philosophy, I think.
So you've been working on your song challenge. You've been getting pretty far, actually.
Yeah, I actually started it and got through a first draft fairly quickly, like within days, and a few kind of surprises along the way. Actually, I woke up like in the middle of the night last week, at like 4 a.m. or something like that, and I was like. And for some reason, I woke up and I was thinking about this challenge. I'm like, maybe it was just like, I better get cracking on this thing. But I had a couple of ideas in my mind. So I grabbed my phone, bedside, and jotted down a few sort of potential lyric lines. And then it was the next day that we were going out of town for a few days. And I was like, let me see what I can get done in the morning before we leave. Or maybe it was the night before. I forget. I mean, it was like a last minute thing before we went away. And so I just sat down on my piano, sort of did some chords and things like that, and sang some of the lyric, and was trying to think about, okay, is this a 5? Is this a 7/4? Is this a 9/4? And I tried to force my way into a 7/4 with it, and it kind of worked. But my brain kept going because I was trying to rush it before we had to leave. I think my brain just kept going to defaulting to 4/4. Every time I sang a melody, it was 4/4, 4/4, 4/4. So I had to sort of think my way out of it. But I think at the end of the day, I still ended up with a little audio sketch on my phone that was kind of a hybrid of an odd time signature. And by the time I got to the end of the melody, it was 4/4. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to shut it off now. I don't have time to futz around with this anymore, but at least it's something. At least it's something, right? And then when we were out east at a cabin for the weekend, and of course there we have some downtime, but I don't have my piano. So I just fired open that little audio recording, took a listen to it on my headphones. Okay, that's what I've got to start. But then I really just focused on more lyric writing at that point and sort of thinking about melodies as I was writing the lyric and sort of putting the little numbers above my lyrics, but there's the 1, there's the 3, there's the 5. Okay. You know, just kind of the meter about where it might fall. And then after we got back after the weekend, I had, I had sort of a chorus written. And so I sat down and did that first with instruments and things. And I've got, by the time I got through this sketch now, I think I've got like two sort of interesting things that I've maybe haven't quite done before. And they feel a little forced, but anyway, it is what it is. So my verses are in 7/4, but you know how we've talked about this before when we did our odd time signatures episodes and things like that, how you can take a 7, you can divide it into 4 plus 3. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. So I'm alternating bars of where the emphasis falls. So my 2-bar loop in the verses is 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, that's
four.
Really cool.
So it's like a mirror.
Wow.
Of it, right? So by the time the verse finishes, it's like back to back 4/4 bars and back to back 3/4 bars.
Oh, right.
In pairs.
That is right? So neat.
So it's kind of weird, and it kind of works because you're feeling the next beat, and it's not happening, and it's like,
oh right,
why not doing that? And then in the chorus, I actually got back to what I wanted to do originally with this challenge, is work with compound time, where you're running two time signatures at the same time.
Oh, geez.
So my chorus music is in 3/4. My chorus melody is in 4/4.
Oh, wow.
And so it's what did it work out to? I think it was 18 beats in total. No, 24 beats in total. So it was 8 bars of the 3/4 to make the chorus. I wrote the music first.
Right.
Just the chord progression. And then I had the lyric melody. I'm like, how am I going to jam this lyric on top of this and make it a 4/4? So I literally had to like count it out and then play it on my keyboard and move it around in the MIDI so that it lined up. And I'm like, okay, but then the chord changes here, but then the melody note here, it's got a line, it's got to work with the chord. And it just seems forced.
Well, that's right? Okay,
but,
though.
But it's there.
Yeah.
But it's there and it's kind of catchy. I don't know. And that's kind of it. And then I slammed out a bridge in a 5/4 thing.
Holy smokes.
So another thing. So the bridge is a lot more like that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, like it's a little more energetic and stuff.
Right.
And then go back to a chorus. But it's it's coming together in a weird way.
That's awesome. Well, and the whole point of this challenge is not to wind up with a great song, but just wind up exploring something you wouldn't have normally explored.
Yeah. And I've explored odd time signatures before, but when I did my electropop album, it was...
Yeah, so this isn't your first rodeo.
This is not my first rodeo, but I am taking a very different approach to this, because that one, that electropop album, everything was gridded and on the downbeats, and it was very highly structured.
Right.
This one, I'm trying to move away from highly structured. It's a little more fluid and a little more like...
Right.
Esoteric.
That is so cool.
Right. Which I mean, I've never written a song like this before, that's for sure.
Yeah,
that's
well, sure. Which is what you want to do. It's
yeah. I feel like, you know, like some of our previous guests, like Frank Horvat, would look at this and go, yeah, Joplin. Kind of thing, right? This is like his kind of weird, I think.
Yeah, but it looks like he's done it for so long. So but you gotta start
Yeah.
You gotta start somewhere, and it's so easy when you're working on your own to just do what you've always done.
Yeah, for sure.
To put your fingers where you've always put your fingers on the fretboard, to play the same chords you've always played. So this is
And that's what I mean. But when I first started this, I mean, my brain, my fingers on the keyboard just kept going back to 4/4.
Oh God. Yeah.
It just was the default way of thinking about things. And especially when it comes to melody construction, you just tend to sing the melody in a 4/4.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's been a challenge for me too. I've had to, I thought 7 and 8, I was going to do 7, 8. Mm-hmm. It felt a bit too rushed. So I figured 7/4. It was just a challenge. Like I was changing the chord on 1. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and then changing it on 3. Mm-hmm. But then to change it back on the 1 after 3, it was really tough. I was, you know, I almost like I was actively, you know, counting it out all the time.
Yeah.
And so I created a drum beat, which is pretty basic, just boom, boom, ch, boom, ch, ch,
yep.
Which is pretty obvious, but at least it helps me understand.
Yeah. It does a trick. It does a trick. Yeah, yeah.
And I had to listen to that for a long time to get my brain to recognize that meter is not being broken.
Mm.
It did help a bit. And I am kind of getting there, but it has been, I knew it was going to be a challenge, but it's been even more of a challenge than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Trying out a bunch of different things. And I tend to not be good about just putting down chords that are just okay. I need an idea that kind of grabs me. I need something to grab me then so that it'll be ignited. And so far, nothing has been ignited.
Yeah. Are you just doing chords or are you writing a riff?
Well, I've tried all sorts of different. I've tried chords. I tried some guitar stuff. I'm going to try some bass stuff now.
Oh, okay.
And I think it is just kind of playing around with it until I find a riff or a chord that kind of works.
Mm.
I did add two hand claps at the end because it sounded normal, but then I realized it was also borrowing David Brubeck's song when it does doom, 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 doom.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that until I was listening to Dave Brubeck and went, oh, yeah.
That's hilarious.
But it felt natural to do that. So it's been good. I don't think it's going to be quite as complicated as your song. Probably going to be in 7/4 all the way through. Maybe I'll try doing alternating the 3 and the 4. I think I'll be doing well if I can just get a verse and a chorus.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I can always tell when I was practicing that I was practicing well, because at the end of my practice session, my brain would be kind of buzzing.
Yeah.
Be kind of like, you know, and it's because I was pushing myself. And I have to admit, I haven't done that for a while. And this has been the first time, and I'm at the end of it going, feel my brain buzzing again.
there's a synapses. There's new synaptic connections happening.
Yes. Because, you know, it's when you have too long a deadline, if you don't have a band, if you have nothing to actually force you to complete stuff, you just kind of play around.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And this was my suggestion, and it's been a challenge, but that's good. That's why we call it the Song Talk Radio Song Challenge. It's not called the Song Easy. It's called the Song Challenge. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, I would say, I think you might benefit from writing. Like, listen to Soundgarden. They've got some wicked riffs in 5 and 7.
Oh, that's true. I always forget about those.
You know what I mean? Like, listen to some of their riffs. Like, they're it's just the melody construction of the guitar part in 7, and it's not, you know, even necessarily, like, there was a 3-4 division happening, but it's like, you know, da 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 da. Like, it's just like, you know, it's just kind of a cool thing.
Like, I think it's gonna be a fun challenge.
I think so.
It's been tough, but it's been good.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to yours. Yours is gonna be really good.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it at this point. I have to do some more arrangement things in order to get it thing, but that's gonna be for episode next week, because I'll be sharing mine. And then I think a couple weeks after that, you'll be sharing yours, Phil. So you got a little more time than I do.
Because I knew I'd need it.
Yeah, no kidding. But I was actually impressed that I think because I had the kind of ideas rummaging in my head for quite a while, that when I sat down to do it, I kind of knew what I wanted to do. So I just kind of
smart.
Just kind of blurted out. There wasn't a lot of playing around. It was just like, yeah, I want this. I want this. And it didn't end up exactly like I expected or necessarily wanted, but it's close enough to my visual vision, and I was like, yeah, you know what? It's kind of working, and it's fine.
That's great. I have no idea what I'm doing, so I have.
I think that sort of helps.
Well, we'll find out.
But yeah, well, so it's like we say, writing with intention. Right? So.
I'm stumbling around like a blind monkey.
Yeah, but you're like you say, your brain is buzzing, so eventually you'll land on something.
That's the whole point.
I would say write a riff on the bass in 7/4. You'll find the glue.
I think that's what it's gonna do. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah,
that's where your strengths are, right?
That's so true.
Okay, I'm here in the band. I think that's all the time we have on the show. So thanks to us.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Phil, for filling up the times. Great stuff. All right, we want to hear from you too. So please send your comments on Facebook or Instagram to @songtalkradio, or send us an email, feedback@songtalk.ca. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes. And subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And please support us on our Patreon page. You can visit songtalk.ca/support. Thank you to all who have supported us so far. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page on the website. And please visit us at our next monthly Song Talk meetup. Whether you're in Toronto for our in-person meetups or anywhere in the world for our online meetups, it's free to join on Eventbrite and free to attend the meetup. Bring a song and a lyric sheet and get constructive feedback from other songwriters. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. Mr. Phil.
philemery.ca.
And be sure to stop by the website, songtalk.ca, to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Thanks for tuning in and
keep on writing. In any time signature you want.
In any time signature. Any odd time signature.